Chapter 5.
Badrang ordered a wall guard to be posted night and day against the return of Tram and Clog. He harboured no doubts at all that the pirate would be back, doubly bent on revenge and conquest. Extra guards were put to watch the slaves when they were quarrying stone, fishing or tending crops to feed the horde. Feldo's father, Barkjohn, had wheedled himself onto kitchen duty. He kept his old eyes and ears open, gathering all the information he could. In the slave compound at night, he discussed it with others. Since Martin's open defiance of Badrang and Feldo's rock-throwing, a new mood was beginning to make itself felt among the captives. Keeler, Barkjohn, and a hedgehog named Hilgors were a little bolder than the rest. They soon became the ringleaders of a rebellious little group that met each night around the compound fire. Barkjohn was a squirrel with a wise old head, and every beast listened when he talked.
"We must do all we can to help Feldo and Martin escape, and the other little mouse, Brome. If they can make it to freedom, I know they will do all in their power to defeat Badrang and free us all. Feldo and Martin are the only ones ever to defy the tyrant. I'm certain that if they were on the outside, they would not leave us here to rot in captivity."
There were murmurs of agreement from the creatures that crowded round to listen at the meeting. A mouse called Purslane, who sat with her husband and babe, called out,
"Tell us what to do, Barkjohn. We're with you."
"Get them extra rations to keep up their strength,"
Keeler answered for the old squirrel.
"Shellfish or shrimp if you're out with a fishing party. Crops or fruit if you work in the fields. They need to be fit if they're to escape."
A female otter named Tulgru spoke up.
"What if you work in the quarry like I do? How can I help?"
"Hinder, hamper, work as slowly as you can,"
Hilgors answered her.
"If at all able, try to steal anything that can be used as a weapon. Tools, sharp rock shards, anything. They may all be needed someday."
"Don't listen to them. You'll only land us all in trouble."
Barkjohn stood up and gazed out over the slaves.
"Is that you, Droop?"
A surly-looking bankvole, who was trying to hide behind others, lifted his head.
"Yes, it's me."
Tulgru grabbed him and stood him upright.
"Then dinna hide at the back, muttering. Stand up and speak up face to face with others instead of slinking about."
"Go on, Droop. Have your say."
Hilgors nodded towards the bankvole. It was clear whose side the bankvole was on when he spoke.
"We are slaves. And it's better to be alive than killed trying to do foolish things. Badrang and his horde are too strong for us. If you start stealing fish and crops and tools, we'll all be punished. I don't want to be suffering for the foolishness of others. Count me out of your plans."
Purslane threw a piece of firewood at Droop.
"Shut your snivelly little trap. I've seen you hanging around the guards and carrying tails. You're a sneak, Droop, a toady."
Angry murmurs arose from the crowd. Barkjohn held up a paw for order. When there was quiet, he confronted the bankvole.
"Unfortunately, we cannot count you out of our plans, Droop. You are one of us. Therefore, all we do affects you, and anything you choose to do must affect us. Together, we can be a stream, coursing its way powerful and silent. Even a small stream can wear away large rocks. But separate us, and we become as single droplets of water, ready to be scattered by the flick of a paw. You're either on our side, or you're with Badrang and his horde."
Droop lowered his eyes, avoiding Barkjohn's gaze.
"I am alone, aside with no beast. Leave me to live my own life as I see fit."
Barkjohn silenced the angry murmurings of the slaves with a growl.
"So be it, Droop. No creature is forced to join us. You may stay alone, but let me warn you, Bankvole. If one word of our business reaches Badrang and his creatures, I will hold you responsible. And when that happens, you will be a dead beast. I promise this."
Droop slunk out of the crowd to a deserted corner of the compound. The silence that followed was eventually broken by Keeler.
"Oh, well, if that's all for tonight, I'll be on my way. Feeding time for the prisoners, you know."
Rose and Grum lay behind the rocks, watching Fortress Marshank, helpless and unable to approach the gates because of the two sentries who stood on the wall top, keeping a lookout for the return of Tram and Clog. The housemaid shook her head despairingly.
With those two up there, we won't be able to communicate with our friend. What can we do, Grum?
I say we sit in tight and wait. Yum friend be a clever beast. He'll think of summat, miss. Yum see, or I.
Inside the fortress, Keeler was racking his young brains for an idea. He poked Scraps through the grating as he whispered to the prisoners below.
They're guarding the wall tops, mates. It's going to be difficult getting instructions to our friends out there. Any ideas?
Hey down there, what's all the whispering about? Are you talking to those prisoners? If you are, I'll lay me spear end across your back.
Keeler spread his paws wide appealingly.
Not me, sir. I haven't said a word. It's these poor wretches in the pit. They're calling to me. They say that they've got the fever and they want to be let out.
Frog-bitten Nipwort, the two rats who were on guard, looked at each other, taken aback by the news.
Fever? I knew it, mate. Gurav was shivering like a leaf last night. He sat by the fire drinking wine and this morning said he was staying in his bunk because of the pains in his head.
Nah, that was just through guzzling too much wine. There ain't no fever in this fortress, mate.
No? Well, what about old Fleabane? Got a great yellow mark on his ear. It was bleeding this afternoon.
Huh? Well, that's because the fellow's been scratching at it to make it go away. Nah, there ain't no fever hereabouts. Take my word.
That's exactly what I said, sir.
Keeler called up to them.
But these three down here are convinced they've got fever or plague or something horrible. Come down and take a look at them, sir.
What do we want looking at mouldy prisoners? Our job is up here looking out for other things.
Listen,
Keeler whispered down to his friends.
They can't stop sick creatures shouting out feverishly. If Rose is outside, she'll hear you.
Below in the pit, Martin grasped his friend's paws.
Who has the loudest voice, mates?
Brome swelled his little chest out.
Try me. Listen to this.
Cupping his paws, Brome yelled aloud in a piercing howl.
Some beast! Any beast! Can you hear me? Help us! There's fever down here!
Both Martin and Feldo had to cover their ears. The youngster had lungs like bellows and a howl like an injured wolf.
Help! Help! We're dying of fever! What's the matter? Can't you hear me?
Nipwort clenched his paws and ground his teeth together.
Of course we can hear you. Stop that yelling or I'll come down here and kick your tail until it's blue.
Oh, yes, sir! Please, sir, kick us, beat us, but come down and see us! We're dying slowly of fever. The place is a plague hole. Come down and see for yourself!
Frogbit shuddered.
Fat chance. I ain't going down there and catching a sickness.
Nipwort was in complete agreement.
No, me, mate. They can yell and holler all they want. I'm not putting a paw anywhere near them.
Through her tears, Rose sat back, giggling helplessly.
That's my little brother, all right. Remember, he used to scream and shout like that back home until Mama let him have his own way.
Yeah, I remembers, miss. I used to plug my old ears up with grass. If yon child has fever with a voice like that, I be a taddypole.
Rose held her throat, and throwing back her head, she gave the eagle call. Grum winced and covered both ears.
My, my, what a family for noisening. Maester Brome'll know for sure as and can hear him now, miss.
The eagle screech rent the night air again. Brome clapped his hands joyfully.
That's my sister Rose, all right. She can screech as good as any eagle.
Martin patted Brome heartily on the back.
Great work, young'un. Rose can hear us. Right. Get ready to send her the message.
From the wall top, Nipwort shook his spear at Keeler.
You started all this, Otter. Listen, they've even upset that eagle bird now. Get away from there. Go on, get back to the compound. You've caused enough mischief around here.
Keeler knew his job was done. Martin and his friends could send their own messages to the outside. The young otter trotted off, grinning happily, as the two guards argued away on the wall.
I'm not putting up with this row all night.
Oh, no? Then go down there and shut them up.
Me? I'm staying right up here, mate.
And so am I, mate. We'll just have to ignore the noise and keep watch for the sea scarab.
Ignore the noise? Are you joking? Listen to that.
Rosie, Rosie, Rosie! Grum, Grum, Grum! Listen to me, listen to me!
The eagle screech sounded again. Rose and Grum were listening. Nipwort and Frogbit plugged their ears with the screwed-up corners of their ragged cloaks and concentrated on watching the sea. Brome sent the message in fine howling style.
In the middle of the gates at your faces! Oh, I'm dying after fever! Walked in a south about 20 paces! It's a terrible The fever! As deep as three mice and a bit! I'm going to die of fever! We need the claws of a good old chum! The fever! The fever! I know that you can do it, Grum! Don't let me die of fever!
There was a moment's silence. Then the call of the eagle screeched out three times. Rose had received the message. A quiet peace fell over the star-traced seas, the shingled beach, and the wearied sentries on the wall-top. The only sound was small waves gently lapping the land as the tide ebbed. Frogbit unplugged his ears. Nipworth followed his mate's example.
Oh, ain't it a lovely and quiet?
Aye, I think the eagle bird frogged him into silence.
Silence? What a lovely word.
It'd sound better if you shut your gob and gave it a chance.
Rose had written it all down on a smooth rock with a piece of sea coal. She read the instructions carefully to Grum.
Face the centre of the gates, walk 20 paces to the south. Brome says there's three of them in a pit that is as deep as three and a bit mice. So if we, or should I say you, dig down twice my height, then straight tunnel from the 20-pace mark, sooner or later you'll break into the pit at about head height. Can you do it, Grum?
The mole winked as he flexed his huge digging claws.
Can I do it, miss? Can birds fly in sky? Can fishers swim in seas? 'Twould be easier than eating your mama's little apple pudding.
If you rescue Brome, I'll see that my mama bakes you more apple puddings than you could shake a stick at when we get back to Noonvale.
The mouse maid hurled herself on Grum and stroked his velvety back fur the wrong way.
Missy, don't you do that, it tickles.
Chapter 6.
Skalrag the fox watched as Badrang tore at the roasted seabird and drank deeply of the good damson wine that Clog had brought him. When the tyrant Stoat had eaten and drunk his fill, he wiped his mouth daintily on a dock leaf and nodded at Skalrag.
Make your report.
The fox swallowed visibly, then spoke, moving from paw to paw as he did so. Badrang had that effect on most creatures. His swift mood changes were a byword among the horde.
Lord, there are no signs of clogging his ship. The sentries are keeping a sharp eye out day and night. The prisoner's in the hole of some sort of sickness, Lord. It may be fever. Bluehide and Lumpback are taking stock of the armoury. Everything else is quiet and in order. There is nothing more to report.